I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The Outer Sanctum acknowledges the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation on which this podcast is recorded. We pay our respects to their elders, both past and present.
Good plan. Who thought of this one?
You're listening to the Outer Sanctum podcast.
Here is a moment in time in the history of the AFL.
In from the side, Houghton. She was surrounded. Jumpers.
And the siren, groundbreakers, history makers.
Welcome to the Outer Sanctum for another week. I am your host, Kate Sear, and I am chuffed, as always, to be with you today to talk all things AFL-M and AFL-W. We're moving into the preliminary final week in the AFL-M, where it's cats versus cats, birds versus birds for a spot in the grand final. And over in the AFL-W, we have just completed the first part of the Indigenous round that will continue this weekend as we see the first ever Dreamtime match on Sunday afternoon. All of this has, of course, unfolded alongside a major historic event with the death of Queen Elizabeth II, and we're going to touch on that in a little while. We're going to reflect on what it all means, but to do so, I'm joined by two of my favourite football-loving sisters. I'm going to let them introduce themselves.
Hi, it's Rana Hussain.
Hi, it's Shelley Ware.
So nice to be with you both. This is a combo I think we haven't had for ages.
I think you're right.
I don't think I've been on in a while. I don't think I've been with you, Sherry. This is great. Anything could happen here.
That's true.
That's true. Lie back and let's see how it goes. It was a huge weekend of football, so let's kick off our chat with some reflections, first of all, on the two AFL-M finals. On Friday night, Brisbane staged an incredible comeback against Melbourne. I'm so sorry to have to remind you of that, Rana. I know it's very painful. But they denied Melbourne the chance of going back-to-back. And then on Saturday night, the Pies were super impressive in a 20-point win over Frio, ending their season and also the career of fan favourite David Mundy. Incredibly, he had played 376 career games without ever being dropped or suspended, which is an amazing statistic. I want to hear your reflections, and Rana, I am going to come to you first as a D to get your reflections on that game and on their season.
Yeah, look, it was a low light for me. It was a really very dim low light. I don't even know what to say about it. I'm actually quite mad at them, which is weird.
I hope you've rung them and told them, given them some feedback.
Receptionist said they love it.
Bet they are. I do feel for the reception staff or the membership staff, to be honest. I saw people chucking their scarves in the bin as well after the game. It's so disappointing, I have to say, because I don't think it's just they were tired or, you know, that they didn't play well. Like, I think there's some real culture issues there for Melbourne. I think that's why it's so disappointing, and there was such a high of last year, and they, you know, rose to those heights, and we were promised, you know, that they're going to do it on home soil, and to kind of fail in such spectacular fashion and, you know, in a disappointing way, it hurts. I can't deny that, and I feel really silly saying that because it's like, oh, it's just a game. Come on.
But no, it's actually not.
It's not, right?
It's really just a game.
And I know it hurt, how much it hurt, because I find myself kind of getting into silly back and forths with opposition fans at the game because I'm so frustrated. A guy in front of me was standing up, wouldn't sit down, and so I had a go at him, and I feel very ashamed, but that's what happens when your team's playing badly. Anyway, it was a bit of a low light. I have another low light, if you'll allow me. And this is no reflection on my beautiful child. I adore her and I support her in anything she does and wants to do. But you know, we've had a really rough time of late. You know, there was an Oz Kick, girls Oz Kick on the weekend. And so we thought, let's go, let's get out, let's do something fun together. And I took her there in the hopes that after COVID, after not a lot of footy for her, something might spark. And at the end of the game, at the end of the day, she said to me, "Mum, I just don't think footy's my thing." My heart broke. As someone who didn't have footy growing up and who's desperately kind of loves it and wants to be a part of it, you know, I did the thing that parents shouldn't do and pinned my hopes on my daughter loving it and thought if I surround her with footy, she's gonna want to love it. And the opposite happened. And so I've had to really go, okay, I'm just going to have to park that. And I just, if there are parents out there who are having the same experience, please slide into my DMs because I need a bit of support right now.
Slide into my DMs, like the sound of that.
What a request. Yeah.
What a request. Yeah, my son, he's football's not for him either. But in saying what you're saying, Rana, surfing wasn't for Taj when he was little. And now that's all he thinks about. So, you know, these things change. So, you know, there's always hope for you.
Oh, look, that's fine. She did say she loves the Swans, which was also a bit shattering for me.
I think she's playing with you, Rana.
I know. I think she's trolling me.
She is.
Yeah, she might slide into your DMs next if you're not careful, Rana. What about you, Shelley? What were your reflections on those first couple of AFLM or those first the two AFLM finals?
With Melbourne and the Lions, I was convinced that the D's had it, Rana. You know, I sort of didn't watch all of the games, strolled around my home, did my thing, came back and was quite shocked. But, you know, those six goals in the third certainly helped Brisbane come home there in the fourth. But my highlight was Danaher heading home and missing the game, to be honest, for the birth of his firstborn, a beautiful baby girl, reminding us that life is bigger than this game. And my low light was actually watching and knowing that Christian Petrarca played with a fractured leg and a corky. It just doesn't impress me. So that was actually my low light. I'm not really into promoting that kind of culture around sport, to be honest with you. But I was thinking with Collingwood and Frio, geez, the Pies, don't they look good? And I think it's Neville Jetta at the club. I'm just going to put that out there. I think that's the change that's happened. I think it's the change. But, you know, Frio, as we know, started terribly. They warmed up, but it was just that little bit too late. You know, they always say if there were only five more minutes or if there was another, you know, quarter, which we don't have because there's only four quarters in a game. But in saying that, the Pies kicking their 13 goals and all of those points, it could have been a completely different story. But that's the name of the game. So yeah, it was interesting. It was good fun, but I really love that Danaher went home for that baby girl.
So do I, and he'll be back in this weekend, I think. So it's a huge inclusion for Brisbane. I'm going to ask you both right at the end of this episode for your grand final tips, so start thinking about that before we go. But it was, of course, also round three of the AFLW, and for the first time ever, we saw all 18 clubs participating in an AFLW Indigenous round. We saw a number of beautiful Indigenous jumpers. We're going to see more this weekend. Again, they're absolutely gorgeous. And there were highlights galore across the round. I have to say, Brisbane continued to impress. They demolished the Gold Coast in the Q clash. And three games in, they have scored 76, 67 and 82 points respectively. And I don't know if you've seen the latter, but their percentage is 401.8. I didn't look up if it's correct, but it must be close. And our very own Nicole Hayes went super early in week one and said she thinks they'll make the grand final. She wasn't sure that they'll win, but she's looking like she might have nailed that prediction there. Our very own Kerry Culkins with the predictions. We also saw the first draw of the year with Carlton and Port both finishing on 27 points. And so the Power got their first ever points in the AFLW. And Essendon continue to impress. I think they're the best amongst the four expansion clubs, thumping the Eagles by 52 points. And they've now won two of their first three games. And I think they're only going to get better and better. But what were your highlights from the W, Rana?
It was so good to watch Ali Blackburn in her 50th game. She's such a wonderful leader and I thought she had a great game. But in that game for me, it was Kirsty Lamb. And I was really nervous for her because do you remember that game last season where there was that hit off the ball on her from Kiara Bowers? And that was the last time these two teams met. And so I was quite nervous for her, but was very pleased to see that they were both very mature, and she played an amazing game. She had 23 disposals, 10 contested, 6 clearances, 5 tackles. She used to be one of those players that just was sort of like middle tier, I guess. So you thought of as middle tier, and now she's just quite formidable, and I love that we've been able to see that growth. My other highlight was Zali Goldsworth's debut, and had a great debut that for GWS in that Sydney Derby, or do we say Derby? I don't know.
No one knows. No one knows.
The S Clash. She had an amazing debut, but my real ultimate highlight was, of course, seeing the first Tigers win at Punt Road. Ali McKenzie played an amazing game. Her skills are incredible, and it was truly in any weather. I was standing in the outer with Emma Race, and it poured with rain. And despite that, her efficiency was amazing. I've just seen in my notes, I have tough angle 69, which is a weird phrase to have in my notes. And I'm realizing that was Ali McKenzie's 69% efficiency.
I thought you wanted them to slide in your DMs again.
I've gone with a real vibe this part, haven't I? Ali McKenzie really impressed me, but if I was going to be even more highlighty about this round, my absolute, absolute highlight was hanging out with one of our listeners, Mrinal from Delhi, India, who has just arrived. She's been in the country for 2 months. She listens to the Outer Sanctum. She turned up to our live show to introduce herself. She was watching streaming AFLW games from India before this, and we got to go to the game together and just meet and hang out in the outer, and I thought, what a joy to be able to do that. And I highly recommend, if you haven't done that yet, take someone new to a game. It's actually just it was such a wonderful joy to do that.
Fantastic. And, yeah, not quite the best weather for her to see her first ever game. Has she picked a team yet, Rana?
I did ask her. She said she's still weighing up her options, so she's keeping it all open, and she's waiting, I think, to see how the season unfolds, which I think is smart from her. I did make a play for both Melbourne or Richmond, but she hasn't committed yet, so I think hit her up.
I think you can hear Winston in the background. He's actually saying, go Carlton, go Carlton.
He is, and I was going to say, Mrinal, slide into my DMs and I'll make a case for Hawthorn for you. Shelley, what were your highlights from the AFLW?
Oh, look, I just can't go past those jumpers. Every year it's my same highlight. I just absolutely love them, and I love the fact that we're celebrating the beauty within Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander culture, and that we're celebrating Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people's contribution to the game, and I just can't go past that at all. And Winston is still screaming out, go Carlton. He's very passionate Blues supporter. But I also can't go past the Lions, Pies, D's and Bulldogs are all 3-0. Like, that is an impressive start to the season. You know, there are going to be four teams there just to really watch. It's very exciting. But my low light, you have touched on it already, Kate, was the draw this weekend. You know, Port with my Blues, and as Captain Aaron Phillips says, a very strange feeling. And I know I said at the live shows that Carlton for the flag, but I actually think it's time to start reconsidering my thoughts.
Yes, I know. Yeah, those other teams are looking good. We've got an exciting round of AFLW ahead of us. As I said, among other things, we'll have the first ever Dreamtime game in the women's on Sunday afternoon. I have to also say, probably the game of the round will be the very final game, which is Melbourne, who are playing this weekend as NAM, taking on the Lions at Casey Fields. That is going to be an absolute cracker and could potentially be a grand final preview. So a lot to look forward to, but there's also a lot of joy in watching the expansion clubs. And I have enjoyed watching my Hawks, even though they haven't got the win yet. I can see lots of little sparks and lots of little moments where things are starting to come together. There's a lot of talent there. So I think there's something for everybody to enjoy in the competition this year. All right. Are you both ready to put on your long sleeve jumpers, roll up your sleeves and melee?
Sure am.
Absolutely.
As we all know, in the early hours of Friday morning, Australian time, Buckingham Palace announced that Queen Elizabeth II had passed away in Balmoral in Scotland. Later in the day, the AFL released a statement of condolence and also announced that a minute silence would be taking place before each game, both in the AFLM and the AFLW across the whole weekend as a mark of respect to the late Queen. It has now been reported that most of the clubs subsequently wrote to the AFL on Friday afternoon, expressing concerns about that decision given that it was the AFLW Indigenous round. And hearing those concerns, the AFL reversed its position for the remaining AFLW games, but proceeded with a minute silence in the men's final on Saturday night. Now, the Bulldogs were reported to say that they thought a minute silence was insensitive, and Bulldogs director Belinda Duarte was reported as saying that the minute silence, quote, imposed a reflection on the impact of the Queen's life and reign, but that it unearthed deep wounds. There were mixed views, of course, with News Corp also reporting that Indigenous elder Ian Hunter had said that he thought the decision to scrap the minute silence was totally disrespectful, given that Australia was a British colony. So there's a lot to unpack here about the intersection of sport, politics, commemoration, colonisation, etc. Rana, I want to come to you first and ask you for your reflections on this whole situation, which has been kind of widely reported. There's still ongoing debate about it, and it has been quite a controversial. All of it has been quite controversial. So, Rana, how do you see it?
Footy aside, I know it's a big moment. I know it's kind of one of those once in a generation moments. It's a big change, and so I think I understand that for a lot of people. Like I know for me, even, there was an element of it, of her passing, that was, you know, the passage of time, reflecting on my own life, that she's been a constant, you know, the monarchy's always, you know, conversations about whether we want a monarchy or not has always been there. So I understand that for people on an individual level, it might mean something, or there might be a lot of reflection, and I totally get that, and people have that right to have those moments. But I think what's been really odd for me is how we as Australians have taken this moment up, and particularly institutionally. And so, you know, we've seen the kind of taking up of all the protocols that come with this, all the pomp and ceremony, that mainstream media wall-to-wall coverage, you know, we've all heard about the public holiday and you know, the parliament isn't going to sit. And I know all of that has been like kind of in the rule books, but it's weird to me that we've all just gone, well, I guess it's in the rules, like we're going to do it. And we're kind of all just playing along. And I feel like, and this is neither here nor there, but I feel like we are all looking at each other going, I guess so. Like, I guess we've got to do this. I don't really know why, but I suppose we better do it. So for me, it's just felt odd in that way. I also thought this was probably a really good moment for us as a country to kind of actually stop and consider it and be really conscious of how we do respond. And I'm not sure that we're taking up that moment, and certainly haven't seen it yet. As an Indian, it's very complicated for me. I grew up with stories about colonization and, you know, what was stolen from India, you know, invasion of India, jewels and resources, soldiers being forced to fight in wars that they didn't ever really sign up to, the Nizam, which was the royals of the area that my parents are from, the takeover of them and kind of them being bought out, really, and so Indians being pitted against each other. So India has a really love-hate relationship with Britain. So all of that has infused how I've also come to this moment as well. And I'm not going to lie, there were a lot of jokes in my family chat group about, like, when are we getting the jewels back? And, you know, who's watching? Like, how can we have this conversation now? So all of that's been part of it for me. And I think that's where my head went. And so for me, Tarun Chola, prominent advocate for violence against women, said it best. And he said, the British ruled India in some capacity from 1757 to 1947. Indian-born people are the highest growing diaspora in Australia since 2011. Yet the myopic nature of Australian media means that not one Indian origin person has been asked to reflect upon Queen Elizabeth's passing. Instead, we see a 24-hour rolling echo chamber of reverence that does not address the complexity of what the crown represents to different people. History is being written, and it seems those holding the pen are intent on not wanting to share it. I'm shocked, but not surprised. And I feel like that's the point, that there are a number of ways we could be reacting to this, and there are a number of experiences and lived experiences that we're just not hearing. So when it comes to the minute silence, I think Oh, that feels like a big stuff up. Like the responsibility that that moment presented, I don't think was thought through. And it just smacks of one of those decisions. Like if my experience has taught me anything, it really felt like something that one corner of the organization decided and didn't talk to the other side about or didn't consult. And I'm still not clear about what consultation actually happened. I guess that's what's alarming to me. And so they either didn't get it, which worries me, or they did think about it and didn't care, which worries me. So either way, something's gone quite wrong here. If it's that they just didn't even think about it and a big part of the organization said, yep, we're just going to go for this, that tells us that despite all the work the AFL's done on representation and understanding Indigenous Australia, it's still quite cosmetic and superficial, and that learning hasn't kind of deepened.
Shelley, how did this feel for you, and what was your reaction to it as all of these events unfolded across the weekend?
Yeah, well, I agree with every word that Rana has just said. You know, there are just so many voices left out of what we're witnessing and what we're experiencing, you know, and as Aboriginal people, you know, we have a deep respect for loss within family. You know, we understand mourning, we understand connection of family, and that we pay respects to people that have passed, and there are periods of mourning. So in that aspect of, you know, this is someone's mum, this is a grandmother, you know, this is a sister, the Queen herself, that's how I look at her as a person, and I'm sad for her family. I'm sad that, you know, she has passed and that they have that deep mourning. I don't have the same connections that people have to her as our Queen. You know, with the similar things that Rana's talking about, what have happened to her people, as we know, have happened here through colonisation for Aboriginal people and Torres Strait Islander people. And, you know, there are Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who do appreciate the Queen and are a part of, you talked about Ian Hunter and his opinion, and I just don't share that. And I talked last week about the Australian Wars and the Frontier Wars that had happened here in Australia, and the loss that we have had as a group of people is extraordinary. It's absolutely extraordinary. And my son said it to me. He said, Queen Elizabeth was alive when the Stolen Generation happened in Australia, and she did nothing about it. Like, she did nothing. Well, she had opportunity too. And I've said this to you all, that, you know, even though people say, oh, but she's not part of politics and she was part of the state head, you know, if I was in that position and there were things going wrong, I would sit in my chambers with my government and say, okay, what is going on here? What have I missed? How have I done it back? And I have said in our group chat too, since the internet, I feel like there's not much you can miss, you know, what's going on in the world. And I don't know if they popped the internet in her red box that sat on her desk, but, you know, she might have been very much kept away from things that had happened. But as a human, and you are in control of many, many places. I mean, I know that she knew about treaty. I know that she knew about those things. So I just feel very let down by that. And so I don't have those connections of mourning that people have. And people say it's disrespectful to say that when other people are mourning. But it's also disrespectful to not listen to why people aren't mourning, you know, and to acknowledge that there is grief in a different level that is happening for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and First Nations people around this country that she and her government have colonised and have, you know, kept this whole charade going on. And it feels like a bit of a charade when I watch Proclamations of the King. Like, it feels like we're keeping some people in wealth, in privilege, and it just doesn't sit right with me after what I've watched. And I haven't watched a lot of it. I've gone to sit down thinking, okay, we're going to get some regular viewing here, and it's just still coming at me 100 miles an hour. And when I saw the Proclamation of the King, I felt, oh, my goodness, are we watching a Disney movie? Like, I feel like we've lost our way. It seems so outdated. And I know that I have gone to a whole other tangent because there's so much in this. It's so complex.
I just wanted to say that I mentioned India, and because of migration and you know, a lot of other things, while I heard those stories, it's not a day-to-day, you know, thing for me. The ability to park it, or to go, all right, well, I'm just going to tune out of it, is also a privilege for me, I think, in that it's not an intergenerational trauma. And so I think even that I was reflecting as you in our chat group, you were commenting on things and sharing how you were feeling and probably, you know, 2% of how you were feeling. It occurred to me that I can joke about it or that I can put it aside and carry on is also a privilege that maybe you don't have or other people don't have, and to consider that as well, because I think people go, oh, well, like it's just one day and it's just a minute silence. But to even be able to do that.
And we've been asking for a day of mourning too of what we've lost here in this country, and that has never happened. You know, I've spoken to so many of my Aboriginal brothers and sisters, and, you know, especially to Belinda. You know, she stood there in that minute silence, and then straight after her minute silence, it was told that we weren't going to be doing it anymore. But she stood there, and she has stories that she'll take with her of how the players felt and how the club felt. And it wasn't easy because they knew that it was hard for her. But she stood there with such grace, and she did it because it was a mourning period for the Wurundjeri people because there's been so much loss within their community. And she knew that they weren't able to be there, the elders, for that. So there's a lot of complexities that are just so difficult.
Listening to you both, you know, it sort of occurs to me for the first time that there is an irony in all of this, that those who are calling for us to sort of respectfully mourn the Queen over a period of time and to not bring up the past, to not kind of critique or engage in reflection on colonisation and imperialism and its legacies because, you know, we have to mourn, are forgetting that the Queen is a direct symbol to a much longer standing kind of grief around mourning of numerous populations, whether it be Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people from this country that we now call Australia, whether it's those in India, Rana, who, you know, fought in fought for independence in India and who died as a result of wars before that in other parts of the world, in Kenya and so on. Really, for a lot of people, Queen Elizabeth's death brings up all of that grief and mourning. Mm. And, you know, I'm reminded of the words of, you know, a very important thinker and writer who wrote about colonization, and that's Frantz Fanon, who, if you don't know him or know his work, I would encourage you to seek it out. And I got back out one of his books this week and went back to it and sort of read it as I've been thinking about all of this. And in his book, Black Skin, White Masks, he writes at the end, "Black and white, colonizer and colonized, must, quote, move away from the inhuman voices of their respective ancestors so that a genuine communication can be born." You know, I've reflected on that over the last few days, and what I feel like is a kind of lack of understanding, a lack of coming together and sort of respectful recognition of each other's positions and experiences. Seeing all of this unfold on the weekend and seeing the, you know, wall-to-wall coverage that you described, Shelley, of the Queen's life, started a conversation in our household about colonisation. And my partner is British and is always very keen to learn more about the history of colonisation. And so we actually went on and found a documentary on the ABC that was made for school kids, believe it or not, and we sat down and watched it together, and it was so informative for both of us, including me, to go back and watch something that's designed for school children but that it has a quite different tone to the sorts of information that I was taught when I went to school, that was a much more positive celebration of colonisation and the settlers who came here in the aftermath of the First Fleet's arrival. It recognised what had been done to the Indigenous inhabitants of the country, and there was a lot of information in there that was just sort of overwhelming to take in. But, you know, one of the statistics was that 70% of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people died in the aftermath of the arrival of the First Fleet from smallpox alone, which was just a stat that I'm not sure I had ever heard, and I certainly was never taught that in
which
school.
Was, by the way, handed to them in blankets as a weapon of war.
Yeah, it's mind blowing, and this is, you know, these are the kinds of stories and the histories that are obviously brought up for us in the aftermath of the Queen's passing. There's a lot that's been written on this, and I'm sure that our listeners have been seeking a lot of that writing out. But there is a really good piece in the New York Times, written by Maya Jazanoff, who is an historian at Harvard University. She comes from a long line of very accomplished academics and has an Indian background, and she writes a lot about the British Empire. In this piece for the New York Times, which is called Mourn the Queen, Not the Empire, she writes that like all monarchs, the Queen was both an individual and an institution. And I think it's a simple point, but I think it bears repeating because for a lot of people, it seems disrespectful to not mourn the Queen or to not hold a minute silence for the Queen because she's a person. She's a real person who served for a long period of time and dedicated her life to the institution that she was born into. You know, a lot of people feel that she might not have had other choices and so on. And that's, of course, something that we could debate over a long period of time. But she was an individual and an institution. She was a symbol, but she was also a beneficiary of British imperialism. And that's the truth. She was only in that position because she had been born into and ultimately inherited the throne. And to say that then, therefore, we can sort of divorce her from the past as a personal, she's not linked to it or not responsible for any of it, is a very bizarre argument to me because she's only there as a direct consequence of that history. She sits on top of that history, takes that place as a result of the things that her ancestors did. And regardless of how she as an individual might have felt about those histories, regardless of what she might have said privately, we didn't hear much from her publicly about them. And I think that's important. And you touched upon that earlier, Shelley. But ultimately, as I said, she is a symbol and a beneficiary of those histories. And I think that's where I've landed with it this week.
And I think it's important for people just to stop and listen. You know, like we've had this time now. It's been a period of days, weeks. It feels like weeks, but it's been a period of time where that initial grief has left people. It is time to now listen to why some people may not have mourned so deeply for the loss of her and why some people did deeply mourn for her. You know, I'm just as curious to why so many Australian people feel so connected to her. Like it's an actual, to me, I'm like almost bewildered by it because I don't understand that. Where could you have that connection? I'm just as bewildered as they are as bewildered by me. So I'm open to listen. I've got some friends that I'm going to catch up with and share stories with because I've seen their posts on social media and I've been quite intrigued by their connection that they feel they have, or do they feel that they have to have that connection? You know, like there's so much about it that I don't understand as an Aboriginal person. I'm open to listening, so I hope the people that are opposing what I'm saying and saying that I'm being disrespectful are also as open to listening.
At times like this, I like to go back to, I mean, and this might sound a bit strange, but I do like to go back to the Mabo case, which I return to from time to time and read sections of because I think it's the most important court case ever decided in this country, which, of course, is a legal system that we inherited from the British. I think we're all familiar with the Mabo decision, but it is worth reading just a couple of brief passages from it because this is where it all began. And now, of course, in the decision of the High Court in the Mabo case, it was a real reckoning with the history of colonisation and the original basis of the invasion. And Mabo is such an important case because it really grappled centrally with what had happened here, but also how the British had conceptualised Indigenous people when they arrived. Justice Brennan, sitting on the High Court in Mabo, wrote this, that the supposedly barbarian nature of Indigenous people provided the common law of England with the justification for denying them their traditional rights and interests in land. And Justice Brennan then went on to write this, which I think is, for me, the most important paragraph ever handed down by a court in this country. He said, the theory that the Indigenous inhabitants of a settled colony had no proprietary interest in the land depended on a discriminatory denigration of Indigenous inhabitants, their social organisation and their customs. As the basis of the theory is false, in fact, and unacceptable in our society, there is a choice of legal principle to be made in the present case. It is imperative in today's world that the common law should neither be nor be seen to be frozen in an age of racial discrimination. You know, that's, I think, the history of this country that we still don't talk about enough, that we don't teach each other about enough, and that I think we can never return to enough times.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
So as we said earlier, the weekend was all about showcasing and celebrating Indigenous culture in the AFLW, and we wanted to really luxuriate in that this week on the podcast and celebrate Indigenous culture because there is still so much to know and so much to learn. Shelley, over the weekend you travelled to the Sydney Opera House for a very special event which was all about Indigenous languages, many of which were lost as a direct result of colonisation. What did you learn there?
I had a wonderful time. I went to Warrane and the sun was shining. It felt like summer. It was glorious. And I sat down with three amazing people who talked about Aboriginal languages and how they're preserving them, you know, with Aboriginal language centres and by sitting with the elders and children and passing on their stories. And it was just so beautiful. And I learned that you're never too old to learn Aboriginal languages, which I knew, but I've always been like, I feel like I'm too old, I'm dyslexic, how am I going to do this? And the man who was there was, you just take your time, you know, take your time and absorb words, which I do, I take in the words, but I think I learned for me is about that it is time for me to really sit down and listen to Wirangu and take on that language and put more into my everyday. I try every day to incorporate the language into my son's life so he hears the words every day. And a big part of our language is actually nonverbal language. So we will have conversations without speaking. So I think for me, it was just a nice way to end what had been quite a difficult week that we'd talked about previously. But I learned that there's a lot of good people saving Aboriginal languages out there. So it was gorgeous to be there.
As part of that, of course, the AFLW and the AFLM has done it in the past, really makes a point of trying to share knowledge about Aboriginal culture and language and to use Aboriginal words. And we're going to come back to some of that in a moment. But I want to ask you both which Aboriginal country you grew up on and if there's something you wanted to share about that country in the spirit of sort of educating ourselves and educating our listeners. Rana?
Well, I was born and raised on Wurundjeri land. So I was born in the Fitzroy area, and the Wurundjeri people take their name from the Woiwurrung language word Warren, meaning the Manigam, which is common along Birrarung, the Yarra River, and Jerry the grub, which is found in or near the tree. So Wurundjeri people are the Wichiti Grub people, and I've taken all of that from the Wurundjeri Land Council website, by the way. And I have to say, in prepping for this episode, I just went down the most joyous and not joyous as well rabbit hole of knowledge and learning. And, you know, I've been very lucky to work, especially during my time in sport, with a lot of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. So I've had access to a lot of information and conversations with people. But just to take some time out to actually do some reading and learning and pausing and reflecting gave my day and my mind something really beautiful, and I don't know if this is the right sentiment, but almost healing as well, just a calmness and just to stop and learn. And so I can't encourage people enough to do it. I was raised around the Maribyrnong River, and the Maribyrnong is an anglicized version of the Aboriginal term Miringanay Benong, which translates to I can hear a ringtail possum.
Wow.
Which is incredible and beautiful. And so for the Essendon Footy Club supporters and Western Bulldogs supporters, it's your region. And so the city of Maribyrnong have done a lot of research and there's a lot out there. But some of the interesting things, you know, that stood out to me was that the Maribyrnong and the Yarra Rivers join and were important as they symbolised kind of the joining of groups who would travel along the river. And so that was a meeting ground. There were a lot of corroborees that took place there, a lot of fishing and ceremonial rituals there as well. I could go on. There's so much that I learnt, but just kind of understanding that, you know, for 40,000 years there were people that gathered in those areas, the places that I grew up, and that connection to what's come before. It's a practice that I'm used to from my own family traditions and culture, but having been removed from a lot of that because of migration, to then connect into the culture and community from here, and specifically to the places that I grew up, really did something to me spiritually, I felt. The other thing I wanted to just kind of highlight as well was the area in which I was born, around kind of Fitzroy Collingwood area on Wurundjeri land, has some really significant Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander history, particularly Victorian Aboriginal history, with organisations like VACA and VALS, the Legal Service and the Childcare Agency, the Fig Tree that was a common meeting place in the Carlton Gardens. There's so much. If you go to the Yarra Park website, just there's so much out there. I just can't recommend researching it enough. I won't go through it all now.
What about you, Shelley? Where did you grow up?
Well, I can't agree with you all, Rana. This seems to be the flow of today. There's a few other little themes you've brought along the way. Self-education is what I promote the most about our history. So self-education is huge, and to hear how much joy you got out of it is music to my ears. I grew up in Adelaide, the beautiful Kaurna people and the Adelaide Plains, and it's called Kaurna Tantanya, which means red kangaroo place. So before 1836, it was this beautiful open grassy plain with patches of trees and shrubs, and it was the result of hundreds of generations of skillful land management and, you know, farming the land and keeping the land and the soil beautiful and fresh and vibrant for the next crops. But one of my most favourite and impressive humans of South Australia is a young man called Jack Buckskin, and he's a proud Kaurna and Narang man who has dedicated his life to learning and passing on his knowledge and language to future generations. He's just this talented, joyful young man, and you know, he fills me with so much joy. But growing up in Kaurna and Kaurna country, I loved it.
Well, that's also the area, of course, of the Adelaide Crows. So that ties back in a lovely way to football as well. Well, I grew up on the lands of the Bundjalung people. Bundjalung country stretches from the northern rivers of New South Wales up to the Gold Coast. So I think the Gold Coast Suns are in Bundjalung country. One of the best known landmarks of that region is what I grew up calling Mount Warning, which all of my friends and I called Mount Warning. For those of you who don't know it, please Google it. It's an absolutely beautiful mountain. It's a large and prominent mountain that you can see from right across the Tweed Valley, and it's got a very distinct outline, and it's absolutely gorgeous. But of course, the name Mount Warning is not the name that the Bundjalung people use. That was a name given to it by Captain Cook. He had seen that very prominent mountain from the sea and given it its name because it signaled a warning that you would be encountering land. But to the Bundjalung people, it's always been known as Wulumbin, which means in local language, Big Fella Mountain, and it contains many sacred sites in that area. The other thing about Wulumbin, if you don't know, is that it's the first place on the Australian mainland that gets the sun every morning. And so in Aboriginal language, it's also known as the cloud catcher. And again, I encourage you to Google it and have a look. It's a beautiful place that growing up as a kid, I went to many times. My friends and I travelled there many times. It's an absolutely beautiful part of the world. Language is a gateway, of course, to learning more about Aboriginal culture and practices and knowledge. And I mentioned earlier in the podcast that the Melbourne Football Club played as Naam this weekend in the women's competition. That's the traditional Aboriginal name for Melbourne. They had rebranded as NAM earlier in the year for the AFL Men's Indigenous Round as well. And when they did that, they said that they were hoping to encourage a wider conversation about Indigenous issues. When I was watching the women's footy on the weekend, I noticed that Geelong had the word Geelang, D-J-I-L-A-N-G, on the back of their jumper. And I might have missed it in the commentary, but I didn't hear what it meant. And I said to my partner, that must be an Aboriginal word. It sounds like the Aboriginal word for Geelong. And like you, Rana, I went down a rabbit hole, which was a lovely experience. I spent hours reading all about Geelong. So Geelang is the Wadawurrung word for Geelong. It's also the word that the club has now chosen for their Aboriginal Cultural Connection Initiative. And the word Geelang means tongue or tongue of land in the local language. It describes the shape of the peninsula where the city of Geelong sits, so the Bellarine Peninsula. If you look at it, it does look like a tongue.
Yeah.
The word Geelong is just a European adaptation for the area. Now, for some, the area is also known as Geelong, which is spelt J-I-L-L-O-N-G, and that's another traditional Aboriginal name for the area. And that spelling means place of a seabird over the right cliffs.
Aww.
I read that the Wadawurrung people have lived in that area for over 65,000 years and that they recognise Bunjil as their creator spirit. I think there are many Aboriginal place names around the country, as we know. One of the ones that's best known, connected to football, of course, is Woolloongabba. That's where the Gabba sits in Brisbane. And that's an Aboriginal word that has a few different reputed meanings, including meeting place and whirling waters. We all went down a bit of a rabbit hole this week reading about stadiums and place names and locations. Shelley, you were looking at Sydney and the Sydney Cricket Ground and its connection to Aboriginal history.
Yes, and well, you know, we did see the very first Sydney Derby in the Indigenous Round, and that was fantastic to see there. So we had a bit of history going on there this last weekend, but a little bit of Aboriginal history to celebrate Indigenous Round. The land that the SCG is built on was the beautiful sand hills and swamplands, which were prime hunting and fishing territory for the Gadigal people before colonisation. And I also encourage you, if you don't know about Pemulwuy, to further research him. He was our first recorded resistance fighter, a warrior amongst our people and highly regarded. And the story about him that all Australians should know, especially about where his remains are, which might help you understand the way that I've been feeling this last week. But it's pretty special there where the SCG is. And, you know, we always think, when I think of that beautiful ground, I always think of Adam Goods and what he went through and the warriors that would have stood with him and, you know, the strength that Pemulwuy would have given him in that moment. So beautiful ground.
Beautiful. And Rana, which ground were you reflecting on this week?
I was thinking about Yarra Park, the MCG and Punt Road Oval. So, of course, the Wurundjeri people and the Wurundjeri and Bunurong people of the Kulin Nations. And I spoke to some of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander staff at the Richmond Footy Club about this and sort of said, look, I'm going to be talking about the region, you know, any advice, any thoughts? And one statement really stuck out to me, which was one of the women that I spoke to said, it's really hard because so much knowledge has been lost, so much culture has been lost. And so sometimes even asking that question or saying, you know, what do you know, is also a really confronting question.
It can be.
It's just more motivation to support and invest in those communities who do have knowledge and to understand that knowledge is passed down through oral tradition. It's not necessarily something you can Google. There's been so much work and investment into resources to get those resources up. And I know, Shelley, you're involved in so much of that as well. But that, you know, there is a protection as well of some of the stories and that you have to earn that right too. So I just wanted to acknowledge that. But we do know that the MCG precinct was a traditional gathering ground. And I wanted to read out a statement from Mandy Nicholson, who designed the MCG Reconciliation Action Plan artwork. Mandy is a Wurundjeri Woiwurrung artist and prominent woman who often is asked to speak in language or to provide ceremonial rituals. She said of the artwork, she said, "A fingerprint is as unique to a person as it is to your country. Where the MCG stands is on Wurundjeri country, on the banks of the Birrarung, meaning river of mist. It is on the site of social and cultural gatherings from time immemorial. Mangrook was played there, the first version of Aussie rules. A possum ball was kicked up in the air in all directions and marked. Eventually, a round patch of grass turned into the MCG, a shared journey." And she goes on, but I just thought that that was a beautiful way to think about the MCG. And I came across an article in The Age from about a year ago called "We Must Walk with Victoria's First Peoples on the Land They Made Beautiful." And it talks about Yurok and, you know, really investigating past communities and cultures of our land. But there was one statement in that as well that I wanted to read out. Johnny Lovett, a Gunditj Mara and Bungaditj elder who lives in Hamilton, said, "Go to a football ground in just about any town, and that was where the old corroborees were held. The MCG we know was one of those places." And so I think that whole precinct is really special, and it's special because we continue that tradition as well. But, you know, do we reflect on that? And I think every time I hear a welcome to country at the G, the thing that strikes me the most is the phrasing of "you're welcome to the land, what's in the land and in the waters, from the tops of the trees to the roots." And that gets me every time, because despite everything we've talked about, the message we're getting as punters who turn up to games is "you're welcome." You're welcome to this. It's not aggressive. It's not angry. It's welcome, if we were to just create that space for that welcome. So it makes me emotional because I'm just sorry. I'm sorry that we don't, and we aren't better, I guess. But that it's such a special region. I feel such a connection to it because of, you know, we all love our footy. But there's so much more before that that we can feel connected to as well.
Beautiful.
One thing I will recommend is, if you haven't been yet, that in the Yarra Park precinct there is the scar tree, which is a tree where bark has been carved out of it and used to make boats and other tools. And there are scar trees all over Victoria. But if you want to learn more, you can go to the Koori Heritage Trust. And there's also an app called Melbourne Dreaming that tells you all about it. But the next time you are at the G, it's right there. It's kind of in between the G and the Richmond Footy Club. You can go and visit there. And it dates back to at least 200 to 800 years. So highly recommended.
Love that. And I was also going to say, because, you know, you're talking about the game of Mangrook, that there's a company called Indigimis and Co that you can go through on Instagram, and I know that she's just setting it up, and it's a growing business, but you can make your own mangrove and it's really quite reasonably priced, or you can get a collection of people together and make it at work and make your own mangrove and have that at home, that beautiful ball to share with your family or with your kids. And so, yeah, and I'm hoping we can do that as an Outer Sanctum team building fun thing to do.
Oh, that sounds great. I'm in. Well, we're only halfway through Indigenous Round, so I would like to encourage our listeners to go down the rabbit holes to have a look at which Aboriginal country you were born on or grew up on. Share that with us on our socials so that we can retweet it and keep these conversations going. Any other business before we wrap this up? Rana.
Just a quick one from me. I'm going to be talking to the incomparable Sonia Hood, who is the recently appointed president of the North Melbourne Football Club. I'm going to interview her for this podcast over the next week. So if you have any burning questions or if there's something you want to know, hit me up, slide into my DMs, let me know, and I'll make sure I work it in.
Fantastic. Awesome. Shelly.
That's some comfy in those DMs, isn't it? We have some great news in our other news. This isn't just other news. This is fantastic news. The Fujitsu General Australian Football Woman of the Year nominees are Kelly Black, Charlotte Miller, Kelly Underwood, and the Outer Sanctum's very own Emma Race. Woohoo! Nice work, Emma Race.
So very exciting.
Congratulations. And you, as the current Football Woman of the Year, Shelley, will be there next week, I presume, to hand over the mantle when the winner is announced.
Will. Wouldn't that be a bit of joy for the outer sanctum?
Do you literally handball it to Emma?
Well, I think so. That's what happened to me, although it was a bit of a blur. But I do recall there was some handing over situation that happened. So who knows? Exciting.
Oh, very exciting. Congrats to all of those nominees, and especially our own Emma Race. Great to see her in there. I just have one other quick bit of other business. And this is for those who've been playing along at home, including Emma Race. On Kate Shearlaw Watch, I just wanted to say that I checked the champion data stats this week and that she grew by another 11.5 centimetres since the previous round. I'll check back in from week to week on Kate Shearlaw Watch for those who are keen.
Crucial.
We've got a massive weekend of footy ahead of us, all of the AFLW, of course, and the prelim finals. The Cats take on the Lions this Friday night at the MCG, and then the Swans take on the Magpies on Saturday at twilight at the SCG. So I've just got one very simple question for you both. Who plays in the 2022 AFL Men's Grand Final? Shelley, I'm going to come to you first.
I'm going with Geelong and Sydney.
Ooh, Rana.
I really hope it's Geelong and Collingwood. Collingwood is so fun to watch right now. Sort of hope. It's quite part annoying, part fun.
It'd be a cracker of a game. I think the better game would be Geelong and Collingwood. I'm with you, but my heart says that it'll be Geelong and Sydney. So let's check in next week to see how we went. It's been lovely to talk to you both after what's been a very intense and reflective week for so many people. Thank you both for sharing your thoughts. For those of us who are listening, please share your thoughts with us on social media. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. Slide into our DMs too. We love to hear from you, so please do reach out. Shelley and Rana, there's only one thing left to say, and that is,
Go footy!
Hey folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.